So now we're going to do the refuge ceremony. Ready, Elijah? So I'll talk a little bit first. As sentient beings, feeling beings, we're driven through all the realms of existence due to fear and the multitude of dangers that we experience and are afraid of. And so when we take refuge in the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, we are taking refuge from those fears. And those three jewels are like a white parasol that gives shade from the heat of karma and defilements. At the very outset, it is necessary to take refuge. As is stated in the 70 stanzas on refuge, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha are the protection for those who yearn for liberation. Faith is a necessary preliminary for refuge. All of you wouldn't be sitting here if you didn't have faith. And it's really faith in the qualities of the three jewels. People with fortunate karma experience powerful faith from the very outset. From when they first meet the teachings, they experience faith. And others have to develop it over time. The first experience of encountering the teachings or a teacher, when tears well up and we feel a profound inspiration and we don't know why, that's called vivid faith. It's a sense of joy experienced in response to the teaching, a teacher, or a temple, or something like that. And then the next kind of faith that arises is a desire to emulate the qualities of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha within oneself. This is called yearning faith. And one experiences later a sense of trust in the three jewels and a confidence in the spiritual teacher who sets out the teachings. And there is a profound confidence. It's no longer just that fresh inspiration, it's a confidence. So that's the next kind of faith. And then finally, there arises what's called irreversible faith. And that's a faith based on your own experience, which no one can take away because it's your own experience. And it's based on the truth of the Dharma, and it becomes impossible then to turn away from the Dharma once you've experienced irreversible faith. So all those kinds of faith are necessary. And it's a process that you're in. You may feel already all those four, or you may be right at that beginning one. There's two ways to take refuge. There's provisional refuge and definitive refuge. Provisional refuge is any kind of refuge that we seek. So whenever we're afraid or we're sad or we feel some need for protection, we go for refuge somewhere, to someone or something. We might go to a friend, we might go to a husband or a wife, or we might go to a bar, or we might go to our bathtub, or we might go into nature somewhere. We go somewhere seeking refuge. But those kinds of refuges are provisional refuges. They can't give definitive refuge. And so the three jewels are definitive refuge in the sense that they cut the trunk of the tree of suffering. And so we can cut off the branches, but then more branches grow back. So by cutting at the base, the root, the cause, then we reach the definitive refuge. And the three jewels are really that. And it's very different than any other kind of refuge. In the Lamrim Yeshe Ningpo, it says, while truly perceiving the three precious ones, the roots and the guardians of the Dharma, to be the unfailing permanent protection, regard them respectfully as your refuge until enlightenment, in order to free yourself and others from samsara. So it's saying until enlightenment. So what this means is it doesn't mean that forever you take this refuge. It's a boat to cross the water. Once you cross the water, you don't need to carry the boat anymore. But we're in the water, and we need the boat. So. Taking refuge is a distinctive sign for entering the path of the Buddha's teachings. One could say that the refuge vow is the very foundation, the root support of all the vows and of all the practices in all the yanas. The refuge comes first. This has been illustrated in so many life stories of great masters of the past. A refuge vow is the very support of the student-teacher relationship. And it is what really differentiates someone who is a Buddhist and who is not a Buddhist, is the refuge ceremony. So the refuge vow is the door to the Buddhist teachings. When Shakyamuni Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths as the ground of the truths of nirvana and the path to nirvana, he explained the necessity to observe moral discipline with the aim of controlling or stopping bad conduct of body, speech, and mind. And then there evolved seven levels of vows that the Buddha taught. The highest level is called Gelongpa or Gelongma, and that's the fully ordained bhikshu or monastic. And then the next level is the Shramanera or the Getsulpa, Getsulma, which is those who have entered the monastic path but have not taken full ordination. It might be called the novice vows. And then the Gendunpa and the Gendunma, which is the lay ordination. So those of you who are taking refuge today will become Gendunma or Gendunpa, taking the first five vows of the ordination. Not to kill, not to steal, not to lie, not to become intoxicated, and not to interfere with an existing relationship, your own or someone else's, also known as adultery. But since not everyone's married these days, it needs to be a broader definition. So the reason that you take vows of refuge, you take these five fundamental vows, is so that your life becomes more peaceful and you have less problems in your life, less chaos. If you're lying, stealing, killing, committing adultery, getting drunk, using drugs, your life is not going to be very peaceful or happy, and you won't be able to really practice. And so really the purpose of the vows is to create an experience in your life when you can practice, where you have the freedom and peace to practice. And so it's faith and devotion that open the door to the refuge. And then the motivation to take refuge, we have many different motivations, but the supreme motivation is for the benefit of all beings. So let's take a moment and generate that motivation and think about that although you may be taking this refuge for various personal reasons, that the fundamental motivation behind it, below it, through it, is to be a greater benefit to others. And who do we take refuge in? We take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. The Buddha signifies complete liberation. The Buddha was a historical being like any of us. He wasn't born a Buddha. He became a Buddha. And he was able to attain enlightenment by relating to other examples of awakening and then strenuously practicing. So you can't achieve enlightenment without effort. The Buddha made incredible effort. For 6 years, he dedicated his entire life, day and night, to this practice. And most of us will need longer than that. So the Buddha is it's a beautiful example, because we're not taking refuge in a divine being, we're taking refuge in another human being who woke up. And we all have that capacity, we all have that Buddha nature. And so we can all become Buddhas. And so when we take refuge in the Buddha, we take refuge in an example of a human being who applied himself, who looked deeply into the nature of reality, and then woke up. So it's really, taking refuge in the Buddha is also taking refuge in our own Buddha nature, in our own potential. So just take a moment and feel that within yourselves and feel your own potential awakeness. And maybe your potentiality is already more than just a potentiality, but is already beginning to shine forth. And you feel that and you begin to have confidence in that. And that's really taking refuge in the Buddha. It's an example of the historical being, but also in your own capacity, your own potential. The Buddha has an array of qualities such that even if one were to live for innumerable kalpas, one would not have time to praise the wisdom of a single hair on the Buddha's body. They're really inconceivable qualities the Buddha had. And here we are 2,500 years after the Buddha and still being inspired by the life of this one person. To practice the teachings of the Buddha is the Dharma. The Dharma is the path of meditation. It's the truth that the Buddha taught. But really the Dharma is more like a recipe than a series of beliefs that you have to sign up for. The Buddhism is a path of inquiry. It's a path of inquiry and into your own life, into your own motives, into the results that you see from your actions, and into the true nature of reality. And the Dharma is your guidebook, or your cookbook, maybe. You might say, there's a lot of recipes in it, and our practices are various different recipes. But you've got to cook, or you've got to follow that guidebook and go to those places. Otherwise, it's just a book. And so Buddhism is really a path of action. It's a personal path of a practice. And it's not about belief. It's about inquiry and discovery and inquiry and discovery and gradually developing a sense of what is true, what is untrue, and what is the true nature of existence and what is illusion and delusion. And that we have teachings on what that is, but really it has to come from you and in you, this discovery. So the Dharma is all those teachings, not only from the Buddha, but from all those that came after the Buddha and gave their recipes and walked their path, or walked their path, and then wrote their cookbook. And so there's an incredible richness of legacy from all these various beings over this 2,500-year period. So it's so rich, you can just... I mean, even if you spent the rest of your life studying and reading, you couldn't read it all. You couldn't study it all. It's so rich, so vast, and so exciting, and so profound, and so juicy. That's wonderful, the Dharma. And the Sangha are those individuals that practice the path of the Dharma. So it's your friends. It's everybody here together with you today, your spiritual friends. And the Sangha are the practitioners that practice the path of the Dharma. And they're the ones that remind you of the teachings. So they're your spiritual friends. You don't go to them like a worldly friend and just gossip or, you know, go out for a drink or whatever. Your Sangha has, it's a different quality of relationship that you have with those people. And the Sangha is also the monastic community, those who have taken the vows and are deeper, more deeply committed perhaps than you are, and you go to them also for inspiration. The Sangha is really a jewel, even though it is others similar to yourself who are not fully realized or on the path, but still, without Sangha, it's very lonely. And you can feel the support to be with others who are practicing, how much that helps you to share that spiritual adventure together. It makes it much more joyful, much richer, and more inspiring to have those friends on the path. And it's interesting because the Buddha and the Dharma, that's something so sort of transcendent and pure. And the Sangha is really those on the path, so it's not that, but still, it's one of the three jewels. And that's really important to remember, that your spiritual friends are one of the three jewels, and you take refuge in them. And I think all of you can think about people who have been important spiritual friends for you. Maybe they're not monks or nuns or anything like that, but they're people who you've gone back to over the years, or you've had conversations with or been friends with, and they've given you something that's brought you deeper into the path. And so that's your Sangha. And maybe you remember the first person who gave you a book about the teachings, or started talking about it to you. And that's the beginning of Sangha, that kind of relationship. And you'll become that for others. Buddhism is not a practice of an evangelical religion. It never has been. The Buddha had to be requested to teach. Buddhist teachers don't teach without being requested. It's something that people have to seek out and find. And then it's there. But it's not something that's promoted in the sense of trying to convince others. It's something that you have to seek out, and because your karma ripens, that happens. You seek it out, you find it, and then you're enthusiastic and you want to follow that, and you do. And that brought you here to this moment. So it's really something to celebrate, this moment in your life. Think about your whole life and what led up to this, and all those little signposts along the trail and the winding route that led you here. Or perhaps it's a very direct route, you know, that you come to when you're 5 years old through your family, and that's considered to be the most auspicious, the best karma to meet the Dharma at birth. But most of us, it takes a while. And we don't come from a country where this is taught widely, and so we have to really have sought it out. The ultimate refuge is known as the authentic refuge of the true abiding in the nature of phenomena, which is the Dzogchen teaching, the great perfection. The true refuge is your own true nature, the empty essence Dharmakaya, the luminous nature Sambhogakaya, and its compassionate expression Nirmanakaya. So remember, when you take refuge, it's not only taking refuge in something external, like the idea of the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, all these outer things, but it's really this inner true condition of reality that you're taking refuge in. And you use those outer relationships to reach that inner truth. And that's really what you're taking refuge in. The true refuge is your own Buddha nature. But you have to find that. You have to kind of take the layers of clothing that are covering that essence off and gradually strip down to that true condition. And that process is the path. And we're all on that path together. And today we're here celebrating a moment with you on your path. So this is your day that you're taking refuge. And your life will never be the same because you've made this step. It's like any important life ritual. There's a before and an after. And so let's just sit for a moment and feel that moment that you're in your life and what's led to that, and all those around you who have supported you to reach this moment, and your connections that have brought you here. So just take a moment and feel into that. And feel the great joy of having arrived at this definitive refuge that can truly bring you such joy and such freedom. A real sense of celebration of this moment. This ultimate refuge is the understanding of the primordial wisdom, and the essence of that wisdom is emptiness. Its expression is luminosity, and emptiness and luminosity join together and express themselves as compassion. So that's the depth refuge. So feeling the empty essence, the luminous nature, and its expression as compassion. So in terms of the actual ceremony of taking refuge, we will do the relative style of refuge. And so you have your vows, right? And so you take these vows from the bottom of your heart, feeling that from now until enlightenment, you'll place all your hopes in the three jewels, no matter what good or bad happens, no matter what hardship. You feel the three jewels have full knowledge of everything that can take place in our lives. And so you can surrender to this blessing. And repeat these words of commitment, surrendering to the three jewels. And so we'll read the vows three times. And those who are renewing vows, put in your refuge name. And those who are taking the vows for the first time, say your normal name, where it says I blank. Put in either your refuge name or your name, your ordinary name. And so we'll read those together three times with your hands together. And or if you have to hold your vows to see them, just put one hand up and then you can just hold it with the other hand. One of the things that you remember after having taken refuge is you don't step on or over the Dharma. So you, even though it looks just like a normal piece of paper, you realize this is really something different. And so you hold your vows and or place them on a table or something. And so we'll just sit for a moment before we begin, and then we'll repeat the vows.